Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is World Form Zen Fighting Champion John Chong, and you're listening to the AMAA Legends and Pioneers Radio Blog Show with Professor Gary Lee and the Sport Karate Museum Archives, connecting the history one warrior at a time. Enjoy.
Aloha, everybody, and much more.
Aloha.
To you. And welcome to the AMA Masters and Pioneers Radio Show. And Hunchy Bowen, Bill said he's tried to call in a few times, so he's trying to call in right now, sir. So as you're talking, Bill's trying to call in. So I like the introduction
of
my producer.
Can you
Hunchy
hear me?
Bowen. Yeah, Bill, you're there.
I'm here. I've been here for the
good,
last
buddy.
15
Hang
minutes.
Hang on a minute. Hunchy Bowen's
going to
talk
Bill?
A little bit, and then I'm going to introduce you. Hunchy Bowen, go ahead, sir.
Hey, well,
I'm
thank
here,
you, sir. You know, we've got a good man on the call. We've got the one, the only, the Superfoot, the old Superfoot.
Oh, I'm excited.
And you know, he is the man and a good friend. Hey, Bill, this is Jesse Bowen.
I'm here. How you guys doing?
All right. Good.
Good. How are you?
Doing good. Now. Hey, Bill, before I introduce you, buddy, I got to introduce my co-host. Wolverine, you there? Wolverine,
yes,
you
I'm here.
For you.
Yes, I'm here.
Gene? Hey, buddy,
yes.
I got Bill Wallace on the line. Say hello to Bill.
Awesome. Hey, Uncle Bill, how you doing? Wolverine.
I'm wonderful. How are you guys doing?
Doing good, sir.
My other co-host is Mr. A.J. Perry. AJ, are you there?
I'm here. How are you?
Say hello to Uncle Bill. And he's Uncle Bill to all of us because he is family. So
watch
anyway,
it now. Watch it kind of talk.
You know, this is my fourth interview with you, you know, and I'm so excited because I got some questions that some of the emails have sent to me that I need to ask you later on. But before we get started, I want to say one thing. Thank you, Hunchy Jesse Bowen, for letting us put on the Sport Karate Museum Pioneers and Masters Radio Show for 7 years. And I really appreciate you, and I want to say thank you. Now, Bill, I want to ask you right off the bat. In 1974, you became the first world middleweight world champion. What was it like to become that in 1974? I'll make you remember a little bit, okay?
Well, you know, if you think about it, it was the very first championship. We really didn't know what full contact was like. When Mike Anderson called me and Joe Lewis called me and says, "You are middleweight in the competition," I said, that's like fun. Well, you guys have a wonderful time. Because I didn't want to do it at first.
But you look so good.
Yeah. But if you think about it, none of us, the only one that knew anything about contact at the time was Joe Lewis. And he looked superb out there. The rest of us were just fighting point tournaments and throwing technique hard. So,
I want to talk a little bit about your history, too. Now, when did you make black belt, Oliver? What year did you make black belt?
1967.
Now, and you also studied judo. Was that first, or you studied judo after karate?
Yeah, judo was first. I was a wrestler in high school and college. And when I joined the service, they didn't have a wrestling team, but they had a judo team. And those people that played judo understand that judo is very, very similar to wrestling. Or wrestling is very, very similar to judo. So I took right to the judo aspect of it. And in 1966, I tore my knee up playing judo.
Now, what leg was that? What leg did you hurt your knee on?
Which one do you think? If I kick with my left one, which one did I hurt?
Oh, yes, sir.
I tore the right.
Now,
I
that's
tore
the
question,
one of the first questions I got for you from some of my emails, and I'm not like you. I don't get hundreds of emails a week. I got 40 or 50 just on your show this week. But one question was, do you remember how many grand championships you won in sports fighting before you became the full contact champion? Do you remember how many?
No.
You remember, I got another question. Another one, buddy.
Yep.
You remember how many people you beat 3-0 in less than 1 minute.
Do I remember what now? Saying that again?
Okay, I'll say it slow. Do you remember how many people you beat 3-0 in less than 1 minute?
The funny thing about that is back when I was fighting point tournaments up until about 1970, 73, 74, the point matches were 2 points. If you got 2 points, you won. So it wasn't 3 points. Yeah. It was 2 points. You win 2-1 or 1-0. But the final match was 2 points. So, you know, a bunch like that, but, you know, I don't know exactly how many. All I know is all I care about is that I did good.
Now, another question is one of your best friends, Mr. Glenn Keeney. Why was he called the Fox?
Because he was a sneaky son of a gun. He was one sneaky son of a gun. We would spar. We would fight. we would go to the Kumakai Academy when I was at Ball State. And we would fight for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours. And, you know, and it was not an absolute blast. When we fought in competition, when we fought each other in competition, I would go to the heavyweight division, he would go to the lightweight division because I was a little bigger than he was, just a little bit. And then if we fought for the grand championship, everybody would leave because they knew it was going to be 10 or 15 or 20-minute fight.
Well, it'd
always be 1-0 in overtime.
Hey, Gary, I have a question.
Go ahead, AJ.
When you did your changeover from point to full contact, did you like full contact better?
At first, no. Point tournaments were fun. You know, point tournaments, because you know when you went out there that there's a really, really good chance you weren't going to get hurt. All of a sudden, full contact happened. Now, understand, the first 3 years of full contact, you could throw, you could take down, you could sweep, you could kick the back of the leg, you could do anything. You just couldn't elbow or knee, and you couldn't arm bar or choke. But you could throw, and you could sweep and do all that other stuff. So we were scared. I was scared. I mean, you didn't never know. And the first couple of years,
I remember watching you fight. You were just hard to hit anyway, but you had such a repertoire of kicks that was amazing with that one leg. And everybody knew you kick with that one leg, but you were so fast and so quick and so invasive. Now, who did you model your kicking from, may I ask?
Well, I modeled it after myself. And then because I didn't have any idea because I studied in Okinawa, and then all of a sudden I come back to the States. But I remember a guy from Texas named Skipper Mullins.
Yes. God bless Skipper.
And
well,
he was
absolutely fantastic
with his right leg.
He was an incredible kicker himself. I mean, that makes
sense.
He was. Now, you know he has a little brother named Don Mullins.
Yep.
We call him
Moon. Yep. Don Mullins, yep.
And
I'll see him.
I've known him since he was a brown belt, Bill. And he was amazing. I got to tell you a funny story. One time he was fighting, okay? It was in Houston. And this guy was saying, he's not that good. And I say, listen, I bet you $100 he's going to beat the guy in less than a minute. And I won $100, Bill. Ha-ha! You know,
yes.
Moody's pretty darn good. He really is. Good guy, though. Good heart.
Yeah, really.
And
you don't
ask Bill to demonstrate his fade to you. He demonstrated it to me one time and knocked me in the pool at Super Grand in Savannah.
Who is this?
This is Billy Swinney. It's Billy Swinney.
Hey, Billy, I'm going to bring you on. But...
Billy, you're lying. I never did anything like that.
Yes, you did. Ate dinner and you just were demonstrating your fade to me and I ended up in the pool.
I apologize.
Hey Billy.
No, it was okay.
It was at the Super Grands, right?
Yes, sir.
That's in December, right? Is it that in December?
It was in December.
Yeah, sometimes in December and sometimes it was in November.
Yeah,
right.
It was either Thanksgiving or Christmas.
Chilly, right? The water was cold.
Sir.
But
it
Bill
was
a fabulous guy. He was awesome about it.
Well, let me ask you a question, Bill. Now, you fought a lot in USKA, which is the United States Karate Association under Mr. Robert Trias, rest in peace. But now, what were some of the toughest tournaments that you fought in, some of the big ones?
Oh, God, every one of them. I mean, you know, the thing in point tournaments is you can fight somebody that has no reputation at all. But if he's on that day and the referees decide to call his stuff, you're going to lose. I mean, you know, it depends on what the referees see, how you feel, how he feels. And, you know, luckily for me, a lot of my points were clear. You know, like I would kick to the head or side kick or something like that. It was very clear. Not like throwing a reverse punch that if he throws a back fist at the same time, which one they're going to see. But I'm a distance from you, so when I stick my leg up there, it's a pretty good distance from my body to your head. So the kicks are you know, pretty evident. But
see, that's what, you know, I was going to ask you. Do you prefer distance or do you prefer close?
Distance. I want to be in the next room.
That's funny. I love it. Now, you really perfected the low high round kick and the triple kick and the whatever kick, the hook kick, round kick, round kick, round kick, side kick, round kick. I mean, that's amazing. Now, the thing I wanted to ask you was, and this is from me to you, is that what was your favorite technique? What was the one that you enjoyed hitting the people the most with?
Side kick.
Sir?
I like the side kick.
Side kick. And you had the control of either sticking them or using it just for a point, correct?
Well, yes and no. Oftentimes, because when I would throw the sidekick, I was trying. You know, if I throw the sidekick and if I throw the sidekick and you try to jam it and I stuff it in there, maybe I knock the wind out of you, which is okay because I'll apologize for it. and then defensively, I had a good defensive sidekick too because people would charge in, and I had the distance. What? That I just stick the sidekick in there. So sidekick work, you know, it's hard to fight when you can't breathe.
I understand. Now, did you find the Texas sidekick where they chambered, like the one that Allison taught, different than the one that you did? Or were you doing that? Or when you know the difference, right?
Well, yeah. See, I brought my leg up and stuck it out like that. You know, Allison was a taekwondo person. So when he would throw the kick, he threw it like a taekwondo person would throw it. Well, because he had two legs. Trouble with me is I only have one leg because I got a bad right knee.
Yeah.
So what would happen is I would you know, slide in in the seminars people hear me talking about a hyperbolic curve, and I bring the knee up like Joe Lewis would throw a back fist. That's where I threw a side kick, up and out. I bring it up, cock it, you know, not really cock it, but bring it up in a hyperbolic curve and stick it out there and try to get you to walk into it.
Well, that's really interesting. Now, I got to ask you, one another email I got was, who's the toughest point fighter you ever fought in your career?
The toughest?
The one, Fred, one you remember the most.
Oh, Fred Rand, I'll give you a list. Fred Rand.
Whirlwind.
Michael Whirlwind.
He got the name Whirlwind. How'd you get the another question I got asked, right? How'd you get the name Superfoot?
Oh, well, in 1976, I was fighting a guy named Jimmy Collins. And I knocked him out. Well, I hit him and knocked him down with a roundhouse kick that nobody could see. So they played it back and played it back and played it back, and all of a sudden they could see the kick from a specific angle that, again, still people had trouble seeing it. So and then the president of the PK at the time was a guy named Don Quine. And he was a Lakers guy. And he went back to the concession stand, and there's a sign over the concession stand that said, "Superfoot-long hot dogs." and that's where the Superfoot came from. I wanted to be Superfoot long.
Wow.
But that wouldn't happen very well.
Well, Superfoot is pretty pretty cool. It's been with you for many, many, many years. Now, the thing that I've been asked is that, you know, you're just like a happy-go-lucky samurai. Your attitude's been the same way it's been for 40 years. I mean, a lot of guys change, but you become a movie star. You've been involved with thousands of people, but you're still the same happy-go-lucky samurai. Where'd you get your attitude from, Bill?
I get paid for all my life to have fun. I get paid to work out. I get paid to work out with people. I get paid to kick people in the head. And, you know, I mean, how many people have an absolute blast doing what they do? You know, people, you know, look at this way. You know, you got a golfer, and they're great golfers. But after a while, they want to take a couple of weeks off because they're tired of it, or they're worn out, or they're, you know, whatever it is, right? Well, not worn out. I'm 75 years old.
You remember that when my son caddied for you in Austin and we had breakfast with Twain and we had a good time? That was so much fun.
Yep.
Now, are you still playing golf?
I do, but not very much now. You know, I live in South Florida. And, you know, I'll be here and I'll say, I'm going to go play golf. I'll tell Jane, I'll tell my wife I'm ready to go play golf. And I'll drive out. She's in bed now. She's got to get up early in the morning. But it takes me a half an hour to drive to where I'm going to play golf. Then I got to get out on the golf course. In South Florida, it takes five and a half hours to play a round of golf.
Wow. Well,
because everybody so they're doing all kinds of stuff. So, five hours. And then it took me half an hour to drive home. So that's 7 hours out of the day.
Yeah.
And that's if I get right out.
You know, you mentioned someone earlier that was a good friend of mine, and I haven't gotten in touch with him in years. Do you ever see Mike Anderson anymore?
So I talked to him a couple months ago. He still lives in Largo, Florida, over by St. Petersburg.
Wow, he was a great guy. He invented the PKA and the top 10. He was involved with a lot of the karate in the early days. Now you fought in Europe, and one of the questions that was asked, you fought a man named Mr. Valera, right? Dominique Valera?
No, we never fought. We worked out together, but we never fought. We did three exhibition matches.
Now, what did you do in Europe besides fight? Did you go over and do seminars and teach? What did you do in Europe?
Probably from about 1970, from 1976 until 19, even to this day right now, I've gone over to Europe and done seminars. I go to England in October to do some seminars. I go to Sao Paulo, Brazil in November to do seminars. I still do them all over the place. I have a blast. Fun,
yes,
sir. It's fun meeting people, stretching them out, kicking with them, and, you know, having a blast.
You know, you may not remember this, but I'm sure you do. Ron Slinker had a tournament in Tampa, Florida back in 72, and you fought in a ringless ring. Who did you fight that day? I forgot. You remember that fight? You fought in a ringless ring in Tampa, Florida at the Tampa Pro-Am as Ron Slinker's tournament. I remember I got disqualified because I fought a guy named Harold Roth, and you fought that night in a ringless ring.
You know, how'd I do?
You did good. You were impressive. I went down there with Michael Goldman and Bobby Tucker and Sam Chapman and Becky Chapman and Will Wright. We all went down there to watch you. It was a lot of fun watching you beat up those people, whoever it was. I forgot.
I don't know either, so.
Yeah. Now, you retired 23-0. Now, that's really amazing because there's a lot of people that fought through the years, but nobody really retired undefeated. I think Benny might have, but he fought Billy Jackson, so that's controversial. Yeah. You actually went undefeated. How does that feel?
I feel very good. But, you know, people realize when you go a certain length of time and don't lose, skill has a little bit to do with it, But, you know, so does a lot of time a little bit of luck. You have to understand, when I was fighting, I had no injuries other than my knee, of course. But I was always in very good physical condition because of my wrestling ability. And we were talking about kicking before. I found out that the very first kickboxing class we had, the full contact thing, we came back to Memphis when I was living in Memphis. And I said to myself, and I told my friends, I said, I'm going to learn how to box. Because I found out when you're wearing a glove, a back fist, reverse punch, and a ridge hand doesn't work real well.
Well, I don't want to tell you off the bat, you had one of the baddest left hooks I ever saw. It was dangerous. It was accurate, and it was dangerous. I really enjoyed watching the dirty left hook. Now,
what I do is I tell people I learned to box for two reasons. The first reason was to keep you away from me so I could kick you. The second reason was to keep you away from me so I could kick you, you know. So I had a jab and a good left hook. So if you got inside the leg, the left hook worked. The jab kept
you away from me. Okay, I got to move right down these emails here. How good was Joe Cordy? Because you fought him twice. And I was actually a sparring partner for his first fight with you, and he beat the crap out of me at Peachtree. But you fought him twice.
Yep.
Why? I'm just curious.
After our first fight, we became friends.
Yes, sir.
And when he started working for PK, we became even better friends because I kind of represented the PK and all over the world. And then in 1985, he comes up with this idea. Joe comes up with the idea and says, hey, let's have a reunion rematch. You know? I said, 10 years? After 10 years, you want to do this again? He said, yep. We did. We had a great job. We had a great time. And,
now,
and he's still my friend. And he's still
tough. Fight with Joe Lewis? I mean, I posted that fight here last week and got a lot of response from it. How'd that come about, fighting one of your best friends?
Karen Turner, who was working with, some of the pay-per-view people.
She was Hard Knocks, I remember.
And she called me up. She says, hey, we would like to put you on pay-per-view. You want to do a kickboxing thing? I said, well, sure. How long? How many rounds? She said, well, since you're older, because they couldn't sanction it because it's in Nevada. I said, I don't know, 7-8 rounds? They said, well, we can only do 7 as long as it's an exhibition. And she said, who do you want to fight? I said, well, I like to fight Benny. And, and then she said, well, she called him and said he had something going on. I said, well, how about Chuck? Chuck and I would have a blast, because I'd make him look good, he'd make me look good. And Chuck was working on a film or something like that, so he couldn't do it. I said, hey, how about Joe Lewis? So I called Joe Lewis and said, hey, you want to do a 7-round exhibition match? He said, hell yeah, why not? And we've been friends since 1968. So we did it together, and I thought it looked great. I mean, the Nevada Athletic Commission got really, really mad at us because we sparred like karate people spar. You hit each other, right? And the Nevada State Athletic Commission came into the dressing room after and yelled and screamed and hollered at us and said, what the hell do you think you guys are doing? That was no exhibition. That was a fight. And I said, well, that's the way we spar.
Yeah.
But we had ours. And to tell you how tough Joe Lewis was, I hit him, I think in the fifth round, something like that. I hit him with probably the best hook kick I've ever thrown in my life. I caught him coming in, and I zinged that bugger in there, and I said, oh, my God, I think I've killed him. And he backed up, and he goes, ow.
Wow. I mean,
all he said was ow, and came out, and I went, oh, shit.
Yes, sir. Well, back in the 50th anniversary that Mr. Cordy did, the last one he did before he gave it to Mr. Ruth, we got the Joe Lewis Turner Awards, and getting that from you guys from the PK was very, very special. And, you've touched thousands of people, so I got to say this to you. Thank you. I mean that from the heart, Bill. Thank you for being who you are for all these years and what you've done for all of us. And give us the inspiration.
Gary, all in this together. We're all in this together. Understand it. We all, when we started martial arts, we had an idea what we were going to do. My father wanted me to be a school teacher. So I had in my mind that I was going to be a school teacher. No matter how much I competed, no matter how much I fought, I was going to be a school teacher. And now I'm teaching, but it's just not teaching school. I'm going around the world doing seminars and exhibitions and things like that and having an absolute ball. Enjoy the heck of it.
Well, you know what's funny? I gotta ask you this too. Remember the little fart? Remember you used to call Garrett the little fart? He's grown up now. He's 30 years old, Bill.
Oh, yeah. I saw a picture of a couple of days ago. And I went, wow, he's grown.
Yeah, he's doing good. Now, another question I got for you from the emails. How do you get involved with movies? Because you've done quite a few movies. How do you get involved with it?
Well, I was living in Memphis, Tennessee. I knew Chuck Norris from a long time ago because we went to tournaments together and, you know, kind of didn't fight each other, but we competed against each other, the teams and so forth. And he was doing a seminar for Cape Girardeau, Missouri, and called me up and says, hey, I want to come down to Memphis and talk to you. I said, sure. So we came down to Memphis, and this was in 1978, and I was at the top of my career at that time. And he says, can we spar? And I said, hell yeah, we can spar. I'd love to. So we kicked everybody out of the school, and we banged on each other for about an hour and a half, it seemed like it, and just beat the tar out of each other, and nobody will ever know what happened. He hit me, and I hit him a couple times, and we had a blast. And then when it was over, he says, I need to ask you a question. I said, sure, what is it? He says, would you like to do a movie with me and be the bad guy? And I went, what?
Force of One, wasn't that it? The movie, The Force of One?
It was fun being the bad guy.
You were the bad guy. I mean, bad guy. Yes, you were. But that was so opposite of what you are, because you're one of the sweetest guys I know. And I'm not saying that to flirt with you either. Now, what I did was I got a bucket full of hamburgers, and I made Tammy get a bunch of ice cream tonight just because I'm interviewing you. What started that reputation, the hamburgers and ice cream?
I'm really easy to please. When it comes to eating, my mother used to call me persnickety. You know, when it was, everything I eat was plain, nothing on it, no garnishes, no condiments or anything like that. And when I would go places, they'd say, what do you want to eat? I said, well, what's the easiest to fix? And one of the easiest things to fix is a hamburger. How are you going to screw up a hamburger? You know?
Right.
And I'd always get the hamburger plain, nothing on it, just meat and bread.
Right.
And
I don't know.
And
not
ice cream,
now, though. I try it.
Ice cream.
I'm not doing
I love ice cream
right now to the show.
Who is that? Who's talking? Who's interrupting Bill Wallace at Superfoot World Champion? Who is
that's
it?
Me.
I don't
want
to really interrupt you, Bill. I'm sorry. Who is that?
And I like ice cream. I like strawberry ice cream. I like chocolate. I like vanilla. None of the fancy with stuff in them, but just plain ice cream.
I can attest to that.
Well, what is your favorite brand? I'm just curious.
You know, I like Carvel ice cream sandwiches, the flying saucers they call them, and I like the strawberry ice cream at the Marble Slab.
See, you got to quit doing that because I'm gonna make a reputation. I made Bill Wallace stutter. I love it.
I'm trying to think of the different names of the places. You know, you got the
there's
ice cream.
Marble Slab.
I don't know. Someone is trying to talk or there's background noise. I don't know. Now, a few years ago up in Cleveland, Ohio, we had the very first Superfoot World Championships. And I got to, you and Joe and everything to the museum. We had a great time. Now, we're not doing that anymore, but did you have a good time while we were up there?
had a blast. I had a blast. A lot of people came to see me from that I knew from Indiana and around Ohio area. Because remember, back in the 60s and early 70s, I was from Indiana. I used to see all kinds of people competing in Indiana and Ohio. AJ's from, you know, Ohio. So I used to see all my old friends and just have a blast.
Well, it was a fun. It was fun.
It was
now,
fun.
Let me ask you a question that's really cool. Now, you were involved with movies, but you also were a bodyguard. Now, you were a bodyguard for a great comedian who's gone. His name was John Belushi. And I want to say this because I took his skit that he did at SNL, The Samurai, and I created that around the circuit, around, you know, NASCAR, NBL, and that's what I did for years. I copycat it. Now, how did you get involved with bodyguards?
Well, number one, I was not a bodyguard for anybody. My job is to work out with John, get him in shape a little bit so he could do the films. And he liked martial arts. And we met at a party. I was out in California with a guy named Richard Norton. And
He was the black guy, the black ninja in the octagon.
Yes, he was. And we went to a party. And he says, and I come up to the party, we walk in there, and this guy comes out and meets us. His name is Mick. And I said, "Hi, Mick, how are you doing?" He says, "Hi, I'm Mick Fleetwood." So I said, how you doing? And he had a car out there, a 275 GTP long-nosed Ferrari, worth at that time about $1 million. So he throws me the keys. He said, "Take it for a spin." I said, I hand the keys back to him. I said, "No, that's quite all right. I like my life the way it is." And I walk inside with Nick and Richard, and John Belushi's playing the drums. He waves to me, and I wave back. He puts the drum down, comes in and says, "You're that Superfoot guy, aren't you?" And I said, "Yeah." And we talked for about 15 or 20 minutes. And he said, "What are you doing this summer?" And I said, "Well, I'm going to retire. You know, I have my retirement fight in June, and then I have no plans." He says, "You want to go on tour with us?" I said, "On tour for what?" He says, "The Blues Brothers." You know, well, this is before the movie even came out. And I said, "Well, it sounds fun." "Yeah, you know how people ask you to do stuff over and over and over again." Well, anyway, I said, "Sure, give me a call." So I gave him my telephone number, and I'm getting ready to fight. I got a week before the fight, and he calls me. He says, "You still ready to go on the 15th? I said, "Well, yeah, I could come up there after the 15th if I win." You know, he says, "Well, there's a ticket waiting for you in Indianapolis Airport." I said, "Okay." So I won the fight with Robert Biggs and went and flew up to Chicago where they were rehearsing and met John and Danny. And the rest, we had a blast. They did two movies with him. We did Continental Divide, Neighbors. And then we were working on a third one called Noble Rot when John died.
How good was he as a martial artist?
Well, he was a wrestler in high school. He was a wrestler in high school, so he had good athletic ability. He just, you know, because of his size, he was a little tight, not really loose. But he had good movements, and we worked out every day. We'd run every day. We would do weights every day. We would stretch every day. We would do kicking and punching every day. Had a blast. Good guy.
Where's your next seminar so we can tell people who are listening? Because we got over 10,000 people to listen to us. So where are you going to be at next?
I'm in Columbus, Ohio this coming weekend. Columbus, Ohio for Don Matthews in Grove City, Ohio, right south of Columbus. Then the next weekend we have Karate College. Karate College is coming back. It's in Radford, Virginia.
And Mr. Beasley and Bill Superfootball. I think the student Dean Powell is going to be there too. So that's cool. I want to say thank you so much for your time, and I'm sorry you had to call in four or five times. But
that's all right.
Yes, sir. Well, God bless you, Bill, and I'll talk to you real soon, sir. Okay.
You guys take care and keep kicking people.
Yes,
good night.
Sir. Aloha, Bill. I love
you.
We'll
see you next weekend.
Thank
you.
Okay,
that was, ladies and gentlemen, the great Bill Wallace, the great Superfoot Bill Wallace from the PKA, undefeated world champion. And now I'd like to bring on someone who's been very patient, Mr. Billy Sweeney. Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, Billy, thank you for your patience. Now, tell me a little about your upcoming tournament coming up.
Well, we got the 9th Coastal Bend Championships coming up July the 10th. It's a one-day tournament. It's one of the crazier tournaments we have during the year because I have so many crazy divisions. It's not like any tournament that you usually go to. I mean, we have some of the normal stuff for the underbelts, but we get a little crazy when it comes to black belts. Black belts are
well,
a lot of money
at my tournament. Well, the most important question I've got for you is, do you give away money?
Yes, black belts. I have 4 divisions that are $100 for black belts, and then I get grand championships quite a bit of money for black belt grand champions, men and women.
Garrett and Willie, who is my adopted son, Willie Hicks, and Garrett, my real son, they've gone down there and they've experienced it, and you treated them really well, and they'll probably be there this year too, but Tell me how to get involved with you, how to get in touch with you, and what's the entry? What's the entry? I'm just curious from what.
Entry is very light. It's not like a normal tournament. It's like $40 for the first 2 events and $10 for every event after that. And like I said, it's a totally different type of tournament. It brings back fun to competition. I mean, one of the rings is 4 foot by 4 foot. There's nowhere to run.
Wait a minute. You're saying 4 foot by 4 foot for black
belt?
Yes,
sir. We have a black belt fighting ring that's 4 foot by 4 foot, and if you step out, you're disqualified.
That sounds hurt.
It's called the close encounter, and it's awesome. It's just the black belts love it. Because
I bet so. That's
well,
really
most
unique.
Of the time,
you
if you get in a situation, you're not going to be fighting 20 yards apart.
Yeah.
You know.
That's cool. Now, how do people get in touch with you if they want to compete at this tournament?
Well, they can email us for information, and it's at beapiratecbc@yahoo.com. Because it is a pirate-themed deal. We have pirate stuff all over the place. We have free stuff. We cater to our staff. They get a home-cooked meal. It's pretty fun. It's a pretty awesome little tournament.
Now, where's this tournament located at?
This tournament's in Refugio, Texas, a little bitty town right in between Victoria and Corpus Christi. And by going to Jam All a couple of weeks ago, there was over 600 competitors. I see people are ready to get out and compete again, and we're looking forward to quite a turnout.
Yeah, Jamal National was really special. Garrett made 4th down in the PKKA under Jason and Cecil people.
Yeah, it was amazing to see that many people, competitors, over 600 competitors. That's amazing for a karate tournament.
Well, I hope you're very successful in your event. And again, if people want to get in touch with you, what's the number they need to call you on?
They can call me at 361-424-4917. 361-424-4917 for info. Or they can email beapiratecbc@yahoo.com.
Well, thank you, Billy. I appreciate the information, and I'll talk to you real soon. At October 1st, at the Power of Women. So I look forward to that, Billy. You take care now.
And the
okay?
Heroes Wall. The Heroes Wall.
And the Heroes Wall.
Is getting
well,
huge. It's going to be very
show
special.
Here. I'm going to get you back on the show, and we can talk about that. But God bless you, Billy.
We should luck with you, Billy.
In your tournament. Okay? God bless
all
you.
All right. Ladies, thank you so much.
Billy Sweeney from Refugio, Texas. I hope I'm saying that right. He's doing a tournament. And, of course, he had Bill Super Football earlier. But moving right along, I've got to bring on something I've
you guys
really
have a good night.
On for a long time, and
care,
I'm really excited about being a part of it. It's called the History General Portals, and it's the hologram experience called SetVR.app. And I got the inventor on the line, Dr. Lee. Are you there, Reggie?
Yes, sir. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, Reggie. How are you?
Good. Pretty good.
It's been a great show so far, so let's keep going. Tell everybody what SetVR is, that app, and who's involved.
People involved is my partner, Richard Shanahan, Marie Shanahan, my market director, and my developers. We're all excited about SetVR, self-defense enhancement training, and virtual reality as a platform You can practice your skills in self-defense whenever, wherever you want. The Pro Game is compact and portable. You can take it anywhere you travel, and even during a pandemic, you can continue to practice your skills in self-defense while even practicing social distancing. With the Oculus Rift or Oculus Quest headset, you'll be transported to a virtual reality platform whereby a hologram will confront and attack you when you least expect it with random attacks. The goal of set VR is to be able to neutralize an attack or a threat that is sudden, unpredictable, and random. You'll be able to practice to improve your skills in evasion through angular, linear, and circular movements to avoid and to place you in an opportunist position, an advantage for neutralization as you practice to improve your skills in timing, speed, accuracy, as you develop muscle memory. And my goal is to develop a reflex response to a threat or a stimulus to neutralize without hesitation. Just as if I was going to tap your knee for a knee jerk, or if you place your hand on a hot stove and you remove your hand very quickly, that is a reflex response, to reflexively move without hesitation. That's the goal of SetVR. The platform whereby you can practice, utilize what you've been taught in techniques in your schools and dojos, in forms and katas, to apply your skills in self-defense against a random and unpredictable attack, anytime where you want. We're planning to have future updates with multiple attackers, an attack with a home invasion, a barroom setting, and even in a war zone scenario. SetVR will push you maximally to your limits in self-defense. We recently updated our program with punching, picking combinations, and also knife attacks. As you know, with knife attacks, up and close knife attacks are very dangerous. We've implemented that program into our program. We plan to have future updates whereby you can have a virtual match, say Professor Gary Lee, can have a virtual match with AJ, the Wolverine, or Jesse Bowen, in different parts of the country or even different parts of the world, whereby you can practice your skills in neutralization and to learn from each other as you practice your skills. We've implemented a program of metrics whereby you can record the number system of punches, number of blocks, number of evasion, whether you're right or left side dominant, and the endurance is recorded as time spent in experience. You'll be able to learn the importance of creating a diversion when you grasp the attacker's arms or wrist to create a 1 to 3 second pause, a natural response, and window of opportunity for neutralization. We've implemented a program of mindfulness in our program, such as stretching, meditation, and we'll also present you with your own personal yoga instructor. SetVR will continue to update SetVR in the future to help you practice to maximize the application of self-defense whenever you want and when you want. We're super excited. We've just moved the excitement bar upward with SetVR. We've introduced the History Portal. The History Portal is the backdrop for the future development of Professor Gary Lee's vision of having a History Portal and virtual reality. With that being said, Professor Gary, some few words about the History Portal.
Well, we want to record the history of sport karate in America, and SetVR.app is given that platform where we can create the history journal portal and fight the hologram to be able to do that. Now, we have a core group like Alan Steen, Mike Stone, A.J. Perry, Dean Piles, Joe Corley, George Minshew, Patrick McCarthy. I can go on. And then we're going to add a new history general, like every month. It's going to be progressive, but it's going to be really interesting because you'll be learning about what sport karate did in America. You'll be learning questions like, what is judo? Who is Chuck Norris? Who is Gene LaBelle? What is the difference between kung fu and gung fu? You're going to get smart, and then you have to face the hologram. And then if you do and defeat it, you'll enter the gate. And the gates will be the history general portals, and they'll be the story of how sport karate was built in America. I want to thank you, Reggie, Dr. Lee. I don't want to call you Reggie because you're Dr. Lee. You're an actual physical medical doctor that's been dealing with this terrible pandemic. How's that going, by the way?
We're pretty happy that things are lifting up and progress is heading out there, and we're at the end of the tunnel, and things are opening up. We're very, very happy about that, and we're happy to see that the pandemic is winding down. Hopefully, we'll continue.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you October 1st at the Power of Women and introducing SetVR again to the world. We've done it in Greenville and California, and we're introducing SetVR to the world. and I'm excited about it. So thank you again for your information, and I look forward to talking to you next week, Reggie. Okay?
Thank you so much. Thank you for having us.
Okay, aloha. Now, we've done something on this program that's interesting. I've created what they call the six, and we talk about topics that maybe you don't want to talk about or don't want to listen to or whatever, but we talk about them. And I put together a few people, and this week's topic is called concussions in the martial arts. And the first person of the six I want to bring on is one of my dear friends. And, you know, of all the women I could have chosen around the country, I chose her because she's very, very opinionated, and she believes what she says and says what she does. And she's a kung fu karate expert. She started in, I think, Shorinryu or Goju, I forget. But anyway, she went to kung fu, and she is an amazing woman. I want to bring on Karen Slasher. Are you there, Karen?
Wow. Hey, thank you.
The check's in the mail, right?
Whoa. I have to make you cookies or something.
Okay. Well, tell me, in kung fu, did you have to ever deal with concussions?
Oh, sure.
Tell me how you feel about it.
When I was learning, it was in the early 90s when I was doing that, and my teacher used to have to go and fight in New York in the streets. They used to fight all the Chinese immigrants that were coming in there, and the law was do not hit them in the head. You don't hit each other in the head because it's dangerous and because you have to go to work tomorrow. That was the thing. You know, you have to think. You have to live life. And so we never really did a lot of head strikes like that. We would maybe bend you over and then strike the jaw or something, but not a lot of the ridge hands to the temples and things, because it just didn't make sense to get hurt. If you got hurt, you couldn't train. And he honored the brain so much and the eyes. That was meant so much to my Sifu, Pete Pernigotti. And but the problem is you go into tournament, and we did do the full tournament circuit, then you had a lot of head strikes coming in. So we had to be aware of them, and we had to learn how to fight against it, but he really didn't approve. It was not something that he didn't think you should just learn to take it and go on. He said you need to honor your brain.
Well, you know, I won't bring on the other people, but I want to say something. I fought a guy one time named Demetrius Oatry Edwards. And you don't get in the ring with a guy named nicknamed Oatry, first of all. But after the fight, I was being interviewed. And the person came up to me and she goes, "How do you feel, Gary Lee?" And I go, "Well, I'll feel pretty good once I get in the ring and move around a little bit." And then my instructor came up to me and said, "Gary, you already fought." And I go, "What?" "Yeah, you already fought. You got knocked out in the second round." And I go, "Okay." But that's, I guess that was a concussion. I guess where you forget everything. And you know what's true, Karen? You see stars. You see little birds. You really do. I mean, it's really weird when you get knocked out.
Oh, it's,
I mean,
just like,
have you ever been knocked
like
out
the,
before?
Cartoon.
Have you been knocked
no.
out before in kung fu?
No, not too much. I did knock a couple people out, but I only got bumped a couple times. But it's true. You do hear birds. It really is pretty amazing. It's just like the cartoon said.
Well, yeah, whoever did the cartoon, they knew what they were talking about. Now, thank you, Karen, for your... Now, I'm moving
right
along here. Is D.E., are you on the line?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Hey, D.E., how do you feel about concussions? Now, let me introduce you first, because D. Chambers, better known as David Chambers, D is his nickname. He is the president of the Amateur Organization of Karate, which is runs the Texas Sport Karate Organization, which is really amazing. And he's been the president now going on 3 years. And he's one of my best friends, and he's won the Golden Greek, I think, 6 or 7 times, which is the MVP of Texas Sport Karate. So he does have you know, a good idea of what sport karate is. Now, D.E., how do you feel about concussions in sport karate or martial arts?
As long as I'm not receiving them, my view is not that bad.
Have you ever got a concussion? Ever been hit so
I've never received
all the birds or anything?
I've never received a concussion. I think one time I was fighting this dude named Tank from Grandmaster Richard Dixon, and I beat him 7-1. I beat him 7-1, 7-1.
Yeah.
One time he hit me, that made me think he won the fight. But that's a close enough game to getting a concussion. But I do know this, as the things that are safe, you know, we try to ensure, you know, certain safety gear that helps. We try to ensure a moderate contact, you know, I mean, strong contact, not be excessive. We try to avoid unnecessary issues. But in the same breath, it's not popular probably.
Now, you're a tournament promoter. You have one of the largest tournaments in Texas, Christmas in May. Now, you've done it for many years. Have you ever had any major injuries at your event, like a concussion or anything?
I haven't had that many major accidents. I thank God for that. You know, we've had a few slips, or, you know, might have broke a wrist or something like that once or twice. But nothing real severe. One time I did see one guy get kicked and his face hit the floor. We didn't have mats back then, and he got up pretty bad. You know, they did carry him out, and you know that's about the only real bad thing that occurred. And now, you know, we use mats in every ring now. We try to do things to keep it safe.
Yeah,
but
no
I keep going back to we are in Texas.
Yeah.
Thank you for your opinion,
D. It means a lot. God bless you, buddy. I'll see you next week. Thank you so
much.
Now, moving right along, Dr. Williams, are you on the line? Dr. John Williams? Okay. How about A.J. Perry? A.J. Perry?
Yes. How are you?
How do you feel about concussions in the martial arts?
Well, with all the contact going on in certain realms of martial art, I think it's a real problem. Anytime somebody gets knocked out, that's a concussion. And a lot of your states now have concussion type mandates that you have to follow according to state law if somebody gets hit in the head or show sign of concussion. It's a pretty touchy subject now because, you know, a lot of states, are really starting to crack down on it. And it's not just martial art. It's all sports. You know, you're seeing it in professional football now. And it's nothing to, you know, mess around with. You even see in baseball players getting hit in the head, you know, with a helmet on. Anytime anybody gets knocked out, that's a concussion.
Have you had any of that problem since Tank Sudo, or is it?
I'm sorry.
Have you seen it? I mean, Tank Sudo is when you fought in tournaments and Tank Sudo tournaments.
I've seen it several times. I saw a guy got hit so hard one time. He like delayed there a second, and he just fell over like a tower, and bounced off the floor. And you know, I've seen people get knocked out several different times. I was in a ring one time when somebody died at a tournament.
Really?
And they didn't get hit in the head per se, but it was in the neck.
Have you ever been hit so hard where you saw birds and circles like we were talking about earlier?
I'm still hearing them.
Oh, you are? That's funny. Well, AJ, moving right along here. Dean, are you there? Dean Piles. Dean, how do you feel about concussions in the martial arts?
Well, I mean, like AJ said, you know, anytime you're going to have a combative sport, you're going to have concussion. And anytime someone gets knocked out, you know, they're going to have a concussion. Now, the severity of that concussion depends on, you know, the force of the hit, you know, which can lead to a variety of problems. You know, some, like I say, some concussions can be, you know, nothing, and then some can come with a lot of severe consequences and cause a lot of damage and, you know, leave a fighter in a bad way and end his career if it's bad enough. Yeah.
Well, you know, Dave, you're a full-time teacher and you deal and teach Marines every day. And, I know, God bless the Marines, but those guys are hardcore. And now, have you ever hit people really hard like you do in a karate dojo like you do? I mean, do you separate?
I know I'm responsible for a lot of concussions, but when I have my soldiers fight, you know, whether it be Army, Marines, Navy SEALs, whoever they are, you know, they go at it. I had one major say that I was making these guys fight too rough, you know, and I had to tell them, I'm like, look, these guys are training. Their special forces going into combat where people's going to be firing bullets at them. If they can't take a punch in the face with an MMA glove, a 4-ounce glove, then they have no business being on the battlefield because they're going to be a liability to the unit. So, you know, one thing I do is I test their mettle through the combatives program, and that kind of lets you know where that person is. You know, they get hit a bunch and they start turning their back and running. Well, you can bet, you know, you can be sure that on the battlefield when the bullets start flying, they're going to be looking for cover instead of doing their job.
Well, it's a great place,
but, you know, we hate for them to get hurt, and we try to do everything we can to keep them from getting injured during the fight. Yeah.
Dean, that's really interesting because back in the early 80s, I was teaching at the police academy, and a police officer, he was a high-level officer, he said, You're hitting too hard. These guys, you can't do that. And I said exactly almost the same thing you did as far as saying, well, out in the street, there is no karate. There's no wrestling. There's no judo. There's no boxing. I mean, in the street fighter is the most dangerous person in the world. He'll do anything to survive. I'm not talking about guns or knives. I'm talking about anything to survive. And so if you're not prepared for that, you're going to get hurt, period. So, yes, I understand what you just said. Now, is Dr. Williams, you get on the line yet?
Yes, sir. I've been here. I was just on mute.
Okay. Dr. Williams, how do you feel about concussions?
Like everybody is saying, it's a sport that sometimes things just happen. I was in a match where I happened to give someone a concussion, not because I was trying to, it's just because of the, I think I did a spin kick and they just happened to walk into it. And as a black belt, we're supposed to have a lot of control, but sometimes even at 70%, when we're going 70%, if somebody walk into it at the right time, and I'm a type, I just like to test each other's skill. I don't try to get out there and kill or hurt anybody. And that's not only bad for the person that's receiving the concussion, but if you see a person down there in convulsions, I don't know about you guys, but it kind of changed me because I'm like, wow, I'm not trying to kill anybody. And, you know, not because we're in a ring. I mean, because we're in a ring. But
right.
I just think it's one of those things that just happened. I mean, well, you know, it's the risk that we take, even with all the protective gear that we have on now.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Gary.
I appreciate your patience. And
Gary?
You know, yeah, who's this, AJ?
Yeah. You know the quickest way to tell if somebody's got a concussion?
What's that?
When after they get hit, they start going, I.
All right. Little Yankee humor, ladies and gentlemen. Now, thank you, Dr. John. Thank you so much for your opinion. Appreciate you waiting because it's live radio, and And the six is amazing. And every week, the six of us will talk about subjects that people may not want to talk about. And speaking of that, we've got a permanent segment that we've had for a while back now. It's called 3 Minutes with the Wolverine. Now, we're running a little late, but I want him to say what he wants to say, mean what he says, and get back it up. Now, we're talking about tonight, how good a shape should you be in if you did national competition? Wolverine, how do you feel about that?
Well, you know, I feel like that you should always maintain, a constant state of physical prowess if you're a martial arts instructor, especially if you're a martial arts competitor. Now, that's not saying if there's a lot of martial arts people that compete on the circuit that are not in shape. Now, some of them are not in shape, and they are on the circuit, and they can make, you know, whatever place they get seem like they won the championship. But, you know, if you're really going to get out there and compete, one, I think you should, as respect to the sport, you should come in shape. Two, if you're going to get out there and compete, out of respect for your teachers, you should come in shape. If you're going to get out there and compete, three, out of respect for your student, you should come in and be in shape. Grandmaster Lewis told me a long time ago, make my body strong and my martial arts would follow, and I've always tried to go by that standard. In my last fight, matter of fact, I hit a guy with a lead leg hook kick, and it gave him a severe concussion. And he was taken to the emergency room because it hit right on the temple. Now, you know, like Dr. Williams was saying, you don't want to do that, but being in shape and the speed of the technique, not pulled it, but the speed and him moving forward at the same time, that's what causes that. But if you're going to get out there on the circuit, you need to represent 100%, and you need to be in shape. You need to be fit, because the more fit you are, the better your technique is, the less likely you get injured. Your body also, it's like having armor as well as being able to give you strength. It's like turbo boost on your car, and that's what I tell my students. Use your technique. If you need your muscle, then you can kick it into gear. But always come into the competition with a full gas tank, meaning your cardio needs to be through the roof, as well as your strength training and your skill set. Yes.
Well, thank you so much. And that's 3 Minutes with the Wolverine. That's better known as Dean Piles, but his nickname for many years, over 20 years.
Probably better known as
the
Wolverine.
The Wolverine's been called, you've been called the Wolverine now for over 20 years, right? Or longer?
Well, it's been way longer than that. It's since I was about 8 and a half years old. That was my nickname.
Okay,
I'm sorry. By Joe Lewis. So it's
you're the Wolverine. And ladies and gentlemen, he's Dean Piles. If you want to contact him, he's on Facebook and he's everywhere. But he's really an incredible guy. He trained with Joe Lewis, and God bless Joe Lewis, rest in peace. But ladies and gentlemen, you know, earlier tonight, normally I have Hunchy Jesse Bowen speak. Are you there, Hunchy Bowen? Did Hunchy Bowen hang up? Okay. Well, I was going to let him speak. Are you there, sir? Okay, I guess he hung up. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, Jesse Bowen is doing a book for us called the History Journal Book, and it's really amazing. We're going to debut it October the 1st at the Power of Women in Houston, Texas. We'll be honoring all the important women behind the men, and we'll be telling stories about world champion Chris Minshew and international competitor Jenny Pless. So we're going to have a lot of fun in Houston October 1st and 2nd doing the Power of Women and the debut of the book, the History Journal book, and also the debut of the History Journal ring will be October 1st. Now, for more information, you can go to www.sportkaratemuseumhistorybook.com. And the information should be there. If you want to find out more about that information or you want to call me personally, you can reach me at 713-483-0476, and I can give you information. So, everybody, I want to say thank you again to Auntie Jesse Bowen. I want to thank you to Mr. Bill Superfoot Walls, my super co-host Dean Piles and A.J. Perry, the sixth, Karen Slatcher, Dr. John Williams, David D.E. Chambers, and you know, I'm so proud of all you guys and putting you guys together. And, you know, we're going to be talking about subjects that people may not want to talk about, but it'll be interesting. So everybody who's been listening, God bless you. If you want to listen to the show or tell friends about it, you can go to Google and just type in AMAA Radio and then my name and the date, and you can listen to the interview with Bill Superfoot Walls. Now, AJ, Dean, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. What did you think about tonight? Bill did a good job, didn't he?
Oh, he always does.
Yes, I'm here. Yeah, I think he did a good job. Sorry, AJ. Yeah, I think he did a good job.
You know, he did. I mean, we talked about a lot of subjects, and it's going to be fun listening to it. But, you know, I really, really want to say thank you to you guys. That's why I'm talking to you. I appreciate you, Dean. I appreciate you, AJ. And
thank you.
You know, guys.
You're awesome.
We got a great, great thing going on with this. And I want to say thank you to you guys publicly. Thank you.
Thank you. And I think everybody on the show tonight did a great job. And I think you did a great job also, Professor, as usual. So.
Yes, sir.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to the AMAA Path. Masters and Pioneers Radio Show, and we'll be here next week. And as I always say every week, mahalo and aloha. Good night, everybody.
Night,
good night.
Good night, everybody.
Night.
Aye, aye, aye.